We are going to be talking about transportation today. It is Sunday, March 10th, 2024, and we're going to be concerned with getting from here to there and back again. I'm David Mandel, member of the board, transportation guru, and very concerned about the problems that I hear constantly, not just from CCB members, but from many other people with disabilities about various forms of transportation, be it fixed route transit, buses, subways, etc., and of course, paratransit that we all know and love. So the first thing that I'm going to do is going to give a few little housekeeping tips, ground rules, however you want to call them. Going to ask people to talk in general terms rather than talking about your particular streets or various buildings or places, because we don't know all of your different regions, and it gets very confusing when that happens. Each person's going to get, I'm going to be liberal today, about 2 minutes to answer each question. If you can try to do it under 2 minutes, although we don't have as many people right now, so I'm not that worried about that. This is going to be an interactive discussion rather than a presentation, because I think that we all have a lot to say. And I think it's time to get the message out that things need to be improved when it comes to providing public transit, especially for people with disabilities, people who are blind and have low vision. If you're anxious to speak and you've already spoken once, I want to give a chance to for everyone to speak, and then we'll go around again. So with that in mind, I want to find out, and you all know about raising hands, right? So we will do that, because I think if we all talk over each other, it just doesn't work very well. So the first thing that I want to do is to find out how many of you use or rely only on fixed route transit, which is buses, subways, etc. Would it be okay, Guillermo, if I ask people to raise their hands
Yes,
just
that
for
would be
that?
fine.
Okay. So if there's anyone here who relies only on fixed route transit, I'd like to know. Any hands, Guillermo, or?
Let's see here. I don't see any.
Okay, very good. What about, are there people here who rely only on paratransit?
Actually, I'm sorry. The only
Oh.
hand that I see raised is Nicolette Noise. I
Yeah,
don't know
well,
if that was.
Nicolette Noyes also is cited, and it's going to be interesting. But anyway, thank you, Nikki. Okay, so hello, everybody who is joining, and we are glad that people are joining as we speak. Shayna and Christy, welcome. So now, how many people rely on just only paratransit?
Okay, they're going up.
All right, that's what I figured. And so far
we have three.
three. Okay, I'll wait just a little bit longer. Do we still have three?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we have three. Okay, and what about both fixed route? How many of you rely both on fixed route and transit and paratransit?
Give me one moment, David. Let me
Okay.
just go ahead and lower hands.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. Whoops.
This is Christy. I can't raise my hand. Yes.
Okay. But you use both, right, Christy?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought. No problem.
Okay. All
Okay.
hands have been lowered.
Okay. So we didn't get the results of that. How many people use both fixed route transit and paratransit? I have Christy. She can't raise her
Okay,
hand.
so we have four then.
Four and then five, actually, right, with Christy. Okay, very good. Now that's interesting because, of course, we don't have that many people here. But
You
I've
guys,
had.
Do we have a lower all hands button?
Yeah.
I guess not.
Oh.
Yeah, I can't raise my hand, but I depend on, this is Pam, on
Sure.
more on paratransit.
Transit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do
Oh, there
take,
we go.
sometimes we'll take
There we
fixed
go.
route, but rarely.
That's what I have assumed. I've assumed that many people in CCB use paratransit, and I can't vouch for this, of course, but I had an idea sometime back that the majority of people tend to use paratransit. And this is interesting. And so that is why, for instance, this year, a number of us have written a resolution, a couple of resolutions concerning improving paratransit. But what I'd like to know now is, and we're not going to take, we're not going to count anyone or anything. We're just going to go through and let people speak. Does, for any of you here, does paratransit work well for you? In other words, you don't have any problems, no problems with accessibility. It's adequate for what you need.
No.
Okay. Is there anyone here who does feel that way? You can just speak up, raise your hand if you want to speak. And if there isn't, I'm going to assume right
I
now
think
that
we're a
there
small
is.
enough group that we can
Okay.
sort of
You
speak.
know, we're I'm going to try and experiment because we're a small group. If we don't all
Yeah.
talk over each other, I'm going to just say that you can unmute, okay? And then if three or four people unmute at once, we'll just deal with it like we
And
were in
just
a
go ahead and lower your hand if you've raised it.
lower your hand. It's okay. So, who would like to speak? Is there anyone here who feels that their paratransit service is adequate, that they have no problems with it, and everything's fine?
Well, that is quiet, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm a, who is that?
That was me. There is that question kept everybody quiet.
Yeah, right.
Crickets.
Oh, Pam. That's right. Well, I'm glad. I mean, I'm not glad that there are problems with it, but I'm glad to know that that's what we have to work toward, that paratransit isn't all wonderful. Very good. But I'm trying to be fair. So, what about fixed route transit? Does anyone feel that their fixed route transit is adequate and they don't have problems with it at all?
This is Regina.
Yes, Regina.
It's not adequate for sighted people either.
Right. That's right. Absolutely. And
It's not adequate for anybody.
I was going to mention it, but what
And
I
Jean has a
meant,
thought.
okay, Jean, yeah?
For the fixed route bus routes that I use out in the county, they address my needs. They're on time and follow their schedule.
Okay. How do you find bus stops? How do you identify them and locate them easily without assistance?
I'm familiar with the ones that I'm using. Generally, unfamiliar areas, when I'll call in and ask for a description of the bus stop that is nearby, and sometimes they have some information, at least can give me what corner it's on. And then, unfortunately, the only thing if it does not have a shelter there, I just go up and down the curb and follow and find the poles. They're
Right.
not standardized, but
No.
usually they're the C type. And then the next thing is, if somebody's walking down the street, might ask them to confirm
it.
that this is the bus stop. I'm
Well,
finished.
that's fine, Jean. Anybody else have any comments? The thing is that Regina is absolutely right. Fixed route transit, for the most part, is not adequate for sighted people, but they have different issues. And we have those issues as well, the lack of decent service and things like that. There's a shortage of drivers now in some areas. schedules. Buses are not on time. Sometimes buses are canceled and we don't know that. Things like that. But we have the problem of finding and locating bus stops, for instance. And I think that's a problem that most of us have in this country. Bus stops here in my area have been moved many times. I used to be able to find bus stops very easily. Many of them have been kind of clumped together in hubs. So you might have 3, 4, or 5 bus stops right close to each other, and they're often on offset parts of the sidewalk. So that if you're walking in the middle of the sidewalk near buildings, you will never know that their bus stop is there. And they have been moved, and some of them were very easy to find. Some of them were easy to find. And, you know, of course, as Jean points out, poles are not standardized. I found myself occasionally standing by a parking sign for 20 minutes and someone says, "Are you looking for the bus stop?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "This is a parking sign." So that, I think that's a problem. And I was wondering, do others of you have issues finding bus stops, locating them and identifying them?
This is Linda.
Yes, Linda.
So here in Riverside County, I just moved to this area a couple of years ago, just before the pandemic. Mm. So we don't have orientation and mobility instructors to come and give you. I mean, for me, it would just be a brief orientation, and I don't want my husband to do it because I just don't. our gate to this complex is about a mile away from where I live, which right outside the gate, there's a bus stop. I would love nothing more to be able to take buses around here because, number one, paratransit is so inept. And number two, I enjoy taking the bus because I meet a lot of different people. And, you know, I've made friends on the bus and it's just kind of fun, except this is a new area, so I don't know what it's like, really. Mm-hmm. But those are the things. I know in San Diego, people used to park in bus stops.
Yes.
The buses would line up. So like at Horton Plaza, buses would line up 3 or 4 in one intersection. So by the time you find your bus, it leaves because you're stopping at each door because they don't ever call out the number of the bus. You're stopping at each door asking what bus it is. Well, by the time you get to the back of the bus, I mean, to the back of the where all the buses are lined up, and you dodge all the people and all the poles and all the benches and all the stuff in the way, your bus is left.
This is really interesting, and I've seen that happen a lot in my area as well. And I think that one of the interesting things is trying to find ways of easily and quickly identifying and locating bus stops without having to ask for assistance. And I know that in Australia, they have a method where they jurisdictions embed tactile, like the bars. There are bars that are often used to indicate crosswalks, but they put them in a direction where as you're walking, you can feel them under your feet or your cane. And then right adjacent to them is a pole that has a button, an audio button, and also information for, visual information. And I believe it has a braille marking, but I'm not sure. Well, and we don't have anything like that here.
Interestingly, in Mexico, especially if you give the kid a quarter or a dollar, they have kids, which I hate to see kids out there doing it, but they have kids or people calling out the buses that come into, for example, the centro. I traveled a lot in Tijuana, so the centro de Tijuana, they would have people calling out the bus stops as they pull into the stop.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Linda.
Regina in downtown LA, the winos will help you find your bus.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, I remember that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And they're very nice about it.
Yes, yeah. They are.
So anyone else has any comments about finding and identifying bus stops? Because I think this is...
Yes. Shamir, yes. I got something to say. Let the lady go first, though.
Oh, it's Christy. Another problem that I have is I'm used to the bus engines in the front, but they're not in the front. They're in the back of our buses. So I think I'm at the front of the bus because I hear the engine, but it's the back.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they're mid-block stops. So it's really difficult. There's no rhyme or reason to the shape of the bus stop sign.
Nope.
They never changed the schedules from the pandemic. And so the schedules are horrible. I was riding in an Uber. Thank God we have a program where I can get, I get 50% off up to $15 for 15 rides. And so it keeps me from having to take paratransit. Because with paratransit, it's just so unreliable that I can't depend on it.
Right.
And we have one bus by our house that runs once an hour. And like, for instance, if I go to church at 4:30 on Saturday evening, I can't get back because the bus stops running.
Yeah, now that's very interesting because I just have to say, I go to a synagogue here in Berkeley, and people, sighted folks, are so shocked when I tell them that I have to arrange rides either in advance or even if I call our on-demand service. We have a small one that the city of Berkeley has. It takes forever to plan. You have to plan it. You have to talk to an operator. Yeah. So one day I was standing and waiting for my ride for over an hour, and people were like shocked that was going on. And I think it's something that the public doesn't understand. And that's probably something that we need to get across to the public and the media. I know that rules and regulations are very important. However, I think that they have been emphasized far too much. And I know, Gene, you're not going to agree with this, but I really do believe that we have to start talking in layman's terms or layman's terms.
And get an expose going.
And I don't know, Shanir, you are also.
Yeah, I was going to say, Shanir has something, and then Gene does.
Well, I'm totally on that. Okay. Totally on that same page. Your last comment there, David, because I think it's just awareness. And I think it goes along with a lot of disability stuff we go through. People just don't know, and they think we have everything taken care of. They think it's always just a walk in the park for us. I think with a lot of things, I remember when I was in college, a lot of professors and stuff, the disabled student services, they take care of everything, don't they? I was like, not really.
But you had something to say before that.
As far as bus stops, also Sarah's daughter is calling right now too. I know in Fresno they were renovating or redoing a lot of the bus stops. So that issue came up with some people I knew in the community where they were moving them around. So that caused an issue. I tried to make that aware in my department. I was like, now she's calling me. But they were moving a lot of bus stops around when they were remodeling them. So I tried to make that aware. I know one specifically where I told them we needed to put something there so people can identify. Because, the fact that people can't tell which pole is which.
Right.
So, that was an issue in Fresno, though. That's it.
Our transit district here, where I live, keeps on moving bus stops around all the time because they work with something like 40 jurisdictions. And the priority in most of these jurisdictions is construction. So they don't care if it ruins or messes up a route. And I'm on our advisory committee for this transit district, and I monitor the entire service area. And every day, and I'm not exaggerating, at least 6 or 7 bus stops, there are detours, there are temporary closures, and there are even permanent closures as well as bus stops moving. And we've had situations where bus stops are, they'll announce a move one day, and then the next day they'll say a revised announcement about so-and-so move, and it will be completely different and it's just confusing people. It's making bus stop buses hard to use.
That's similar to what we're dealing with. You know, the only thing that worries me though is the issues I heard about was just because I knew the people. So it's like, who knows what's going on that we don't hear about? That kind of scares me.
Now you're in charge of the paratransit program, right?
Well, I'm not in charge. I wish I was, but I work there.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure but exactly what you're.
Someday
what you're,
you will be.
Someday,
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know if I need that kind of. Wow.
So, okay. So, anyone else would like to speak on this issue?
I think Gene had his hand up.
Gene. Okay. Yeah. Let's hear from you, Gene.
I just want to say that one time, maybe about 10 years ago, Sacramento Regional Transit had a program where each bus stop was labeled with a tactile sign that had the bus route in raised print and braille. It was there. Unfortunately, it was well received by people with vision disabilities who were braille readers. But unfortunately, the culture that we have here, and I imagine it's true elsewhere, is vandalism. And the RT could not keep up with the vandals who tore them off and then went to recycling companies and got money for them.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they were not any metal that of any really value. So that they just decided to discontinue that. We did try and did experiment way back with the bar tiles and the combination of bar and dot tiles, like you said, and that were modeled after Japan. The transit company wasn't really interested in spending the amount of money that it would cost to do that. And I think part of it is because and it's true throughout the country, it's the actual responsibility of the bus stop is a combination of the transit company, which is providing the pole and the sign, but all the rest of the features, the bus stop pad, everything, is the local government. So
right, exactly.
It's a city or county government, and so it's kind of convincing them of these various changes. And we do have a few of the signs you were talking about, the audible ones that have, they're designed in larger print for people with visual impairments. And they also have an audio, a button that you push for audio. There's probably only about 10 of them throughout the district that they've been supposedly testing since prior to COVID. And when we've gone to the few of them operational, the audio has been turned off, and we don't get a straight answer on that, why they turn off the audio, except that they say it's fault with the equipment and it's the manufacturer's problem, and they try to work out something. So we're not getting a straight answer on that either.
We've had similar problems here too, Gene, where we have very few of those visual signs, and they turn off the audio or they don't work and they don't fix them and things like that. I have a question about the Braille. Did your district try to label all bus stops, or was it an experiment with just a few?
Well, every single bus stop was set up, the whole system. And they did it in priority because they did it based on Farebox tally of passengers with disabilities and seniors. And then they found that it started with that, but it was eventually the whole system. I'd say that it went for about 2 to 3 years, and then it just, it was mutually agreed. The cost of repairing them. Sometimes they were up only for a few hours, and then they would disappear. And there was one gentleman in our community that's Jeff, his name's Jeffrey, that goes around, travels a lot there. He was finding them, or if they were hanging, he took them and then bring bags of them to RT and say, reinstall them, and they'd go back and take those and reinstall them. So,
oh my God,
if we had a good person, a community person who rescued them when he found them.
Yeah.
This is Linda.
Just a moment, Linda. AC Transit here, it refuses to put Braille placards on all of our bus stops. Furthermore, they don't want to put the route numbers. They want to put the 5 or 6 digit stop ID numbers. And we've told them that people don't reference those. Now, they're standardized, so that's why they like them. But people want to know where the 20 bus is or the 48 bus or whatever. They don't want to know where bus 2356112 is. And they don't want to do it. They don't want to provide any kind. They say all the wayfinding measures that a number of us have suggested are too expensive. So unofficially, they have told me that they're not going to do any of that. And that's why we need to get really involved with transportation to start demanding that these things be done. I think that some countries have more of a commitment, that their governments have more of a commitment to transportation. And I think Gene's right that in many cases, for instance, you have to go through jurisdictions, and a lot of local jurisdictions will say they don't have the money, or they just don't want to do it, or that it interferes with their construction plans and who knows what. Linda, yes.
So Gene just reminded me of something that took place in the 90s. Excuse me. So in San Diego, the San Diego Transit, excuse me, decided that they would have these booklets brailled up. And so they had these plastic cards bound in a booklet with large print raised letters and braille. And so it was kind of on a spiral binder, and you could, they had all these bus numbers inside the booklet, page by page, one page equaled one bus number. And you could flip the pages to the bus that you wanted. And I guess they were, you know, bright colored. And so when you do that, you'd hold it up, and a bus would supposedly stop when they saw that flash.
I remember those.
Yeah, yeah. We have flash cards too.
Orange County.
They even had one for taxis and paratransit. Yeah. I mean, a page for taxis and paratransit. Right. But so, that was kind of inconvenient because you had to hold it up.
And don't you feel helpless and stupid?
Yeah. I did. I find it rather demeaning. Maybe I'm wrong. I was speaking to our accessibility manager, and she said, "Well, David, you should really advocate using them, because that way the drivers will stop and you'll have no problem." And I said, "I don't want to be a spectacle. I'm not willing to do that. Drivers should stop if they see me," because the problem was and is that we will have like 4 or 5 stops very, very close together. And it's very hard to know which is which. So if you're standing at the wrong stop, the driver assumes that you don't want their bus. If you're standing at the 6 bus, even though it's right adjacent to the 18 bus, the 6, you know, the 18 bus driver will just pass you up. They won't stop. And what I have suggested to our district is that anybody, any driver who sees a blind person should stop and say, "Did you want this bus? You know, is that what you're looking for?" And they won't do it. So they insist that we use the flashcards. I'd like to hear from other people about concerns that they have using other paratransit or fixed route transit. Anyone else care to talk? And ideas for improvement?
Well, this is Pam.
Yes, Pam.
We're a unique county. We're the largest county in the state. Yeah. But we have different cities. So different cities have different jurisdictions. Different jurisdictions means different colored bus stops, where the bus stops are at, where things like that. So it's a little different here. We did have a problem that Access did fix, and so did MTA. They put a new Kaiser up in Porter Ranch, which is in the San Fernando Valley. And they wanted to... MTA wanted to get rid of that fixed bus route because they don't get many people traveling on that bus that fixed bus route. But if they had done that, then paratransit wouldn't have been able to go there because paratransit parallels MTA. So it took us a few years to get them to understand, even Kaiser was working with them, to get them to understand that we have patients who take paratransit, we have patients who take the bus. We have, you cannot get, so in the long run, they kept the stop, and Access is going to run it for at least another 2 or 3 years able to go up there. But it's not indefinite yet. We're still working on it. But things like that happen all over the place. I used to go across the street, and I live across the street from the Chatswood train station, which is, they have buses and stuff. I can't take it because, well, they finally cleaned it out. But I used to take the orange line from there and go around to the red line to go just take a trip, keep my dog's training up. But they're talking about they have to clean out the subway stations again because of the homeless situation. So they don't want us to do that. So we take paratransit. Well, paratransit is special. I can take it out of the valley and get to my destination in an hour, hour and a half. Let's say I'm going to Guillermo's house, which is about 30 miles away, 30, 35, 40, 50. He's about 900 miles away. I'll give you guys that one. Okay. I can get to his house in an hour, let's say, okay? But coming home, it may take me 4.
Why?
Because of the share ride situation.
Uh-huh. Right, because you never know how many people are on the van with you.
And so I get stuck on a van with it's just me and the dog load up. And the next thing I know, we have to pick up this person and drop them off and pick up this person and drop them off. And the problem with that is they tell their drivers, you can't stop. Well, if my dog has to pee, you better stop. Okay.
Yes.
And so it's and then the fix. I used to love to take the bus. I lived in Orange County when I first lost my sight. I used to love to catch the bus because the bus routes are a little different. They are straight north, south, east, and west. It's a mess. They're a mess also, but they're not as hard to catch as catching a bus in LA and getting to the bus stop, because the bus stop, even my bus stop, local bus stop here, I have to walk 2 blocks because they don't have a bus line on my street. So you have to walk 2 blocks. There's the bus stop. Oh, it's a bench. So the dog knows where it's at, but it's like, it's a mess. The transportation is a mess. And then they come up with all these programs. Oh, well, you guys can use this program. Well, you have Dollar Ride in my area, but you guys never want to give me the crazy number for it.
Mm-hmm. Or so what you're saying is a hodgepodge of programs, and that they're not really well designed.
Yes. Yeah.
I have a question for you, Pam.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to go to Guillermo's house, which is about 30 miles away, how much would that cost you?
That's $275. No, that's $350. That's $350, right? Because it's under... It's over 20 miles.
Interesting.
Well, that's cheaper than what we have.
Yes.
Because if I were to go to Riverside from Menifee, which is about 30 miles, you know, give or take wherever you're going, it will cost me $10.50. So that's round trip. Yeah. So it will cost me $20 to go to Riverside,
right.
Which is for paratransit. I have to look at the CFRs again. I was pretty familiar with them in the past, but I don't think it's legal unless they have zones.
I think out of the whole state, I still think I think LA County is still the cheapest paratransit price wise.
According to the ADA, folks, paratransit is allowed to charge at least twice as much average bus rider pays.
David, it's Sarah.
Yeah, this is Earl.
Yeah,
I'd like to add a little bit to Pam's experience, I don't use fixed route bus, and I don't use paratransit. I don't use fixed route bus because I'm within 0.75 miles of the bus stop, just barely.
Mm-hmm.
So I do get paratransit available, but that bus route doesn't run on the weekends, so I didn't get paratransit on the weekends, only on weekdays. But I tried, I think it was last year, one time, to try to use paratransit again. And I was going to Kaiser, and during the window, it picked me up. And thankfully, there were no stops, although the bus driver did make a wrong turn and got lost. He still got me there in plenty of time.
Could people mute, please?
But going back...
Thank you. Yeah? Yeah. Go on, girl.
Going back, I waited the full half-hour window, got on the bus. He also had to load a wheelchair. And, you know, and that takes 7-10 minutes. He has to deploy the lift. I get that. And then he goes and drops off the guy with the wheelchair. Well, it's another 7 to 10. It took nearly an hour to get me home. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's about a 12-minute drive from my house.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you use, Earl?
I'm not going to go. This has happened over and over again.
Right.
But Pam talked about her dog needing to go. I'm old, okay? Sometimes I need to go. My water cycle isn't what it used to be.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I can't use paratransit. If I get stuck on that bus, I'm going to have an accident.
Right. Right.
So,
and I know many people who do, actually, Earl. I know people who have documented.
And isn't it?
Hold on, Pam. Earl, what do you use? You say you don't use fixed route, you don't use paratransit. How do you get around?
Well, if I can't get a ride from somebody, I use rideshare.
Okay.
I won't use Uber anymore.
Uh-huh.
But but basically I use GoGo Grandparent. It costs a little more, worth it, because when I have a problem, I can get on the phone. I had one guy drop me off at the wrong place.
That's right. They're not trained to work with people with disabilities. UserViz, which is a TNC, a transportation network company, but they're trained to provide paratransit services, and I wish more of us could take advantage of them. You shouldn't. This is the problem, that GoGo Grandparent is a for-profit organization. I think they're very expensive. My city gives a certain amount of credit to people, and they have what they call city credit program, which is subsidized, and that's a good thing. And I use that a lot. I have used buses, and I like to use buses. And when I worked as a reporter, I used buses. The problem is that often buses do not take you directly to certain destinations. They'll drop you off in the middle of nowhere now. And also, I hear from people who have problems. They wear leg braces and things like that, have crutches, walkers, that bus stops are very far apart, because many transit districts are cutting out local service. They're phasing it out so they can provide bus rapid transit. And if for those of you who don't know what it is, it's a service where you stand on a very narrow boarding island, and there are these tram-like buses that usually have three doors or so, or four doors, and they stop right there at that boarding island, and they function. In other words, they have sensors that allow them to pass, go through red lights. And so instead of stopping at every stop, they stop every half mile or every mile. And it's basically for commuters. But for people like us who depend on public transit, it's very hard to use.
I'm sorry, David.
I get that. And for me...
Hold on. Guillermo?
I wanted to acknowledge Sarah had something to say before.
All right. Sarah. Oh, I'm sorry. Sarah, let's hear what you have to say.
All right, here I am. Thank you, Guillermo. Well, what I was going to mention to you is it's so interesting. We talk about, you know, the fares all across the state, how it's so different. Mm-hmm. Like here in Fresno, it's only $1.25.
Yeah.
But we can only ride within, you know, Fresno proper, just, you know, a little bit into Clovis, but not very far. And so it's interesting on, you know, how do they calculate those routes that are like, this one's going to be $2.75 for you. This is going to be $3.50. And, you know, it's very interesting, you know, and I think again, you know, when we're looking at transportation as a whole, you know, local districts, they're given probably too much freedom in a lot of ways to make these decisions. And, you know, and that's where I think we got to look at, you know, how do we work on advocacy to make things across the board similar, not, and it'll never be the same, right? Because different communities look different. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, are each, you know, is each local jurisdiction being checked in on? Like, are they doing their transportation plan every year? Are they making sure that, you know, things are working? And, you know, the answer is we don't know. And so there really just needs to be some stricter laws and regulations and in, you know, getting past compliance and more into best practice and gold standard.
I'm sorry, finish here.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to know, are you talking about Fresno, the city, or yeah, are you talking about,
Fresno, wow, the city? Yes. And so our county, we do have we have a rural transit, right, but it takes a long time. It's very slow from my understanding. I have not used it. We do have a program through Valley Center for the Blind. That's for people with disabilities within Fresno County. You can do 10 Uber rides a month, and it doesn't matter the cost or the distance as long as it's within the county. And then there's also old school taxi script.
Yep, absolutely.
there's that as well. And of course, yeah, you have to be 70 though. It's insane. And so that's something that I've been advocating for, because that's paid for through our transportation measure C, which I serve on that transportation authority board. And so one of the things that I'm advocating for the new measure is that it be 62 or people with disabilities.
Yes.
Because people are retiring much sooner, people are acquiring disabilities, you know, all across the lifespan, and that needs to be recognized.
Yeah, we have a number in Alameda County. We have a number of cities that have very limited on-demand paratransit programs. Some are better than others. They're all different. And I have advocated having a regional program so that we can go throughout the entire county, or at least most of it. And if they would pool their funds, they would have more economies of scale and probably could lower their prices. Some of them work with taxis. Some of them work with Uber and Lyft. Some work with GoGo Grandparent. And each program subsidizes, it has different subsidies and rules, and it's very confusing. And then, of course, we have our main paratransit service, which is totally ADA paratransit. And what happened there is that our regional transit bus service runs it along with our subway, Bay Area Rapid Transit. So they're completely different agencies. So they had to figure out in the early 90s a fare structure and how they would organize the trips and that kind of thing. And so they had three fare tiers, and there was a huge group of people who wanted the cheapest fare. And they came to these meetings. I mean, several hundred people came to these community meetings, and they lost. The BART and AC Transit picked the highest fare, and we have our service is very, very expensive. Yeah.
And you know, what happened?
Earl?
What happened? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Earl.
Basically, I was actually assaulted by an Uber driver, but I've run into a number of rideshare drivers who do not speak one word of English.
Right.
So you describe what door you need to be dropped off at. Mm-hmm. One of them, he wouldn't tell me where he parked. It wasn't near the door. I could have navigated if he told me where I was, but anyway, but he couldn't because he didn't speak any English, not one word. Mm-hmm. And I've run into that. the I've noticed that in our area, all of the public transit agencies use the Clipper card, but not paratransit. No Clipper card. You have to ask gas about that.
It is going to Earl's. That's what they say they will be using. It's only for ADA paratransit service, but it will be used eventually.
Finally, it's just paratransit. I get that it's not a taxi service, but when a 12-minute ride takes me almost an hour.
Yes.
Something wrong with that.
That's against ADA regulations. It's supposed to be the equivalent of a bus ride with transfers. And that's the big problem.
Right. And once again, they the paratransit is under a number of statutes, and the private companies that run them have to meet those statutory requirements, but they don't have to go one step further. That's the problem. Their contract says they have to meet these minimum requirements, and it's a low bar. So we have to change the statutory requirements to get this thing fixed.
Okay. Go ahead, Regina, but I need to go ahead.
Hello?
So I think we need to reimagine public transit in general, plus what we want for paratransit, because when the ADA was formed and Law 504 and all that, it was a long time ago. There's a lot of technology now. Like, the reason the engines are in the back of the bus now, Christy, is because of environmental things. They're getting better buses that don't pollute. So, of course, we don't want the buses to pollute, but we do need to know where the front of the bus is. So these are balancing acts, and I think... I don't think that public transit is equitable for people in low-income areas. In our area, we have about 2 or 3 miles that has no bus. And when they canceled it, it's a low-income area. And when they canceled it, we said it was a lifeline bus and they shouldn't cancel it. We have no buses for quite a bit of time. There's a light rail station like in the middle where you can't even get to by bus. You have to walk over a mile each time you go to it. So
that's how it is for our Kaiser in Redlands. We can't get there by bus.
Right.
Right.
And so until they improve, I think it's all of one piece. And I think our thing is we try to work on paratransit in the silo, but we really have to work with the rider groups to get them to listen first and put us into their things and show that we have a common goal of making public transit efficient and accessible for all. And it
will. One of the problems, though, Regina, that I have found with mainstream transit advocates is that they don't really understand accessibility and they're not willing to embrace it. They will mouth it. A few of us have educated some of our groups here, but they don't really have a commitment to it. And I think that's a problem. The other thing is, and I'm not saying that we give up on it, but I'm saying it's a tough row to hoe. The other problem is that many advocacy groups want to get rid of cars altogether. And I think many of us would like to see cars as a way of more freedom of movement. I mean, how can a civil rights law deny one of the most fundamental human rights that is embodied in the U.S. Constitution, which is freedom of movement? And we do not have it in
we're not going to get everything we want, but I think joining these organizations go a long way to helping them understand accessibility. We can't wait for them to understand. We have to join there, because when you develop a relationship, that's what causes people to understand.
Before we go on, I do want to acknowledge we do have some raised hands.
Okay.
And I would appreciate that if people want to speak, that you ask for the floor first before speaking out. Okay. Debbie Armstrong with her hand up.
Okay, Debbie.
Hi, I wanted to talk about something that you haven't mentioned yet.
Okay.
And that is microtransit. And what we're seeing now is there's a lot of federal money right now for microtransit. City of Palo Alto just got $2 million, and they're still implementing it. But what microtransit is, or what the federal government sees microtransit as, is a way to handle the first mile, last mile problem with public transit. So the idea is they want to get you from your house to the bus station. However, I think that they're not implementing this money very well, and I think that we should talk with our agencies about it, because what's happening is every city has their own idea of how to do it. So Cupertino, for example, will take you door to door, just like paratransit, and it only costs a dollar. So if you live in Cupertino and you want to go anywhere, it's a buck to go anywhere in that city, but you can't go outside the city. Now, Milpitas, where I live, they're going to just take you to a random corner. And a lot of times it's way on the other side of a complicated intersection to get to your destination. So it's not any better, really, than taking the bus. In fact, it's worse because you're not quite sure where they're dropping you off. So I really think that one thing we should advocate for is standardization in microtransit, and also that microtransit crosses city boundaries, because the reality is that people don't stay within their city. I work in Cupertino. I'm not going to go shopping in Cupertino when I'm supposed to be working at my job. So I have limited chances to use that service, because I'm going to leave that city to go home at night. So that's my point about all of this, and I'm going to go back on mute. That's all I have to say today.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Debbie, and that's an important point, because many of us have concerned. A number of us have spoken with Ron Brooks, and I think many of you know who he is. He is one of the foremost champions for equitable public transit, I think, for everyone, not just for people with disabilities, but especially for people with disabilities and blind people and people with low vision. And he says, you know, why all of this emphasis on microtransit for able-bodied people, but why isn't this being implemented to provide paratransit on demand for people with disabilities? And I think he's absolutely right. So thank you for bringing that up.
And we do have Gene and Earl with their hands up as well, David.
Okay, Gene?
Well, first thing, I want to find out if Regina finished her comments. Regina, did you finish?
I just wanted to share that Jean can expound that in Sacramento, it's not perfect, but we do have some working relationships with some of our advocacy people. So that I don't want the experience in one area to define the area, the experience for everybody. And anyway, even if we do it and, you know, joining these in numbers would help, like if it wasn't just me joining, but that's several people from our chapter or the whole chapter. I mean, but they're not all going to do it. But if you had at least five people or something, that would be significant, and it would start to create those conversations.
Yes.
And okay. This is Gene. I just want to be certain that Regina, I agree with everything Regina has stated. You know, it is, every community is so different. We have our paratransit is $5 per ride. And the thing is, it's within the district. And the district goes from the south area of into Elk Grove, and it goes all the way to Folsom to into the next county on the border, Placer. And from you go to one end of the other end of the county in an automobile, it can take close to 90 minutes just in a car on the freeway. So it's a large county. And so, yes, on the it for people with limited income, $5 is a lot of money. But at the same time, I believe it's $48. That covers the cost, and $5 is what the passenger is paying. That here, where it covers a lot of distance, at least you're not having to deal with restrictions of whether you're in a city, county, how many miles or anything like that. It's a flat rate. You know that even to go to the airport. As Debbie was talking about the micromanagement, micro transit, My understanding, Sacramento was the first one in California to come up with one. And again, it's different from the ones Debbie was describing. The district, they have divided in geographic apartheid boundaries, but there's like zones that the microtransit operates within. And it only so a vehicle is assigned, or vehicles are assigned to one zone, and they operate there. It does not cross over. You could arrange the transfer to another one, but it's to deal with sometimes what you would call in the old days dial a ride. And it was, when it initially started, people were enthusiastic about it. They're not too thrilled about it, the reliability of it, but you could call up to 90 minutes before you wanted a ride and come there. If you arranged when you had to go through a reservation to reserve, sign up to get the service, and if you indicated that you had a disability and that you were found eligible for the paratransit service, it would actually, it does pick you up door and give you door-to-door service. Otherwise, as like Debbie said, it might take you to the nearest intersection. You're told at a certain corner to go there. Or if it's closer, it might be your home. And as for the person without a disability, and there's no restriction whether people who rides on it, it's the general ridership. And the fare is the same as the bus. So it's a different animal every place there. And, yeah, it would be great to get some standardization, but a lot is just what the area is and what the when they get the federal dollars, what restrictions are imposed on it. And the last, just a little comment, and it's for all these vehicles, and Christy and Regina brought up, RT is moving, and it's not just exclusively to, but other districts, to totally electric buses.
Mm-hmm. And so will we.
Eventually, so that the fact is, you know, and I've used it, the reliance on the bus engine, so forth, and even those with the engines now are getting quieter, that will be another factor.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as your paratransit vehicles, electric vehicles too. So and that is something federal pressure to maybe get them, as we've tried with ACB and with the cars and have not really succeeded in producing a pitch sound that at least will be still present, that you hear something as you approach.
Right.
And I know this is a little off topic, but I just, because it's been brought up.
No, it's
about
fine.
The engine.
Yeah,
Christy after Earl.
Actually, we have Earl and then Christy.
Okay, Earl, what did you want to say?
Well, Earl? I can add on to what I said before. My hand's been up for a while. One problem that isn't a problem. Well, paratransit is only available in most areas if you're within 3/4 of a mile of a bus stop. I'm just barely within 3/4 of a mile. But because that bus doesn't run on weekends, I don't get service on weekends. If I live 2 blocks west of where I do now, I would not have any paratransit service.
It's,
so that's a statutory thing that needs to change.
Absolutely.
You shouldn't be denied paratransit service just because you don't live close enough to a bus line.
I think it's cruel. And I cannot understand. When I read the regs, I'll tell you, in the early 90s, Earl, whether we had technology or not, I think that's an excuse. I was shocked at the regs. I think the regs, I was so shocked at how discriminatory they are, how cruel they are, and how really unequal and unfair they are. From the very beginning, I have never liked ADA paratransit. I've always felt that it was the wrong thing to do. And any we can change the model if we work hard enough. And I think that we need to change the model to a same-day service. And that's why it's disturbing that so many districts are working on microtransit solutions for able-bodied people, but they're not dealing with this with regard to paratransit. And they can easily do so if they wanted to. And that's the issue where we have to come and start working. for these things and advocating very vigorously, I think. Christy?
In our county, in Upland, and it cracks me up, they said, they have advertisements on the bus that, of course, compete with the bus stops and the enunciate, you know, the streets. And so they say, have you heard about the newest way to get around town? OmniTrans has OmniRide, which is on demand, and it's in Upland and Chino. Well, for San Bernardino proper, you know, because San Bernardino is actually the largest county. And basically, we can't get to places like Victorville or really too much up the mountain to Big Bear or to other places very well at all. But there is no door to door. There is no, that what they do is they put bike racks and their bike racks on the buses and they're making bike lanes. And that's their solution to what you described as, you know, the mile
first mile, last way. Mile.
Yeah. First mile, last mile. Yeah.
So all these OmniRide that you were talking about, that doesn't work for you at all?
No, because I'm not in Chino and it's for everyone and it's an on demand. And they've had this advertisement for like 3 years. That's the newest thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we needed to really vigorously advocate for on-demand paraprint. There's no excuse why we don't have it. There really is not. And the fact is that everyone else, virtually every other group, has same-day service, whether it's the bus, whether they get in their car, whatever it is. We're the only ones that have to make advance reservation and have to pay twice as much as the average bus fare. That cannot get service within 3/4 if we don't live within 3/4 of a mile of a functioning, you know, bus route or rail line. I think it's an outrage. And I remember the late Judy Heumann mentioning it years ago that we made a big mistake giving up spontaneity because we thought that had something to do somehow with disability. And she said, absolutely not. It has to do with inappropriate policies and inadequate money. And she said, we bought it hook, line, and sinker, and nobody listened to her. It was very interesting to hear her. I interviewed her a long time ago about it, and she was really incensed.
Both at the
disability community's reaction and also the attitude of the transit industry. Yeah, Christy.
The other thing I want to ask everybody is your paratransit, do they cater to the intellectual disability population and what used to be the workshop population? Because ours does, and everybody else takes a back seat to it. And they also have it where drivers, there are no drivers or very few drivers during a certain part of the day, so you can't get a ride. And what they offer just is so ludicrous, you have to just say, no, thank you.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Yeah, that's right.
I would also like to point out, Linda.
Linda was first.
We do take a back seat. They contract. I don't know how this works. I think that ARC or the regional centers pay their a fee, or they're in a contract with the regional centers to pick up and drop off people with intellectual disabilities. And that's fine. They deserve rides like we do, and they have the same problems there on the bus just as much as we are sometimes. But what also happens is that some of them have really atrocious behavior issues that are dangerous. And I'm sorry, but they shouldn't be riding alone, because when they are on the bus for a long time, some of them get really agitated. They don't know where they are. They get scared. And I'm not blaming them. It's just the way it is, you know, but somehow that problem needs to be fixed as well. I don't feel safe sometimes on paratransit.
I want to bring up an issue before we close. And I think it's something that we need to think about. First of all, I agree with Regina. I think that we need many people, quite a number, 5, 6, 10 people to join advocacy organizations. And we need to go to their meetings in a block. And we need to start advocating very, very much. But one of the things that concerns me is that many of the committees that are supposedly set up for people with disabilities are not controlled by people with disabilities. And I think this is a serious problem. For instance, the State Transportation Subcommittee of the Department of Aging and Community Living Advisory Council. It's controlled by transit planners. It's controlled by people from mainstream transit advocacy groups, and it's controlled by people who are involved with running senior day care agencies. But people with disabilities, the chair of that group is a very nice person, very weak, very passive. And I think this is intolerable. And we have allowed all over the country, we have allowed many of these people who claim to be our allies to take over. And the thing is that allies don't take over. Allies support, and they work with a particular group that is involved with a particular cause in an equitable partnership. They don't take over the group. They don't dominate the group. And I think this is a real problem. And I think that until we people with disabilities take control of our own issues and to stop agencies and other groups from directly controlling our lives, we're not going to get too far. And I think we need to be a lot more out there, and we need to be really express our concerns politely, but firmly and very strongly. I think we need to reach out to the media and to the public. We need to reach out to all, you know, whether it's radio or press or television. We need to document issues. I know that a number of parents of developmentally disabled people were very upset at the way their children, who are actually of adult age, were treated on paratransit. And they went to a number of TV stations, and there were some serious investigations a few years ago, which caused paratransit districts here to change their ways. There were a few people who were on paratransit like 3, 4, 5 hours at a time and had accidents like people were talking about, and other issues. People got scared. They didn't know where they were. And these are the kind of things that we have a lot of power, and we don't realize if we get together and work together, we can write op-ed pieces. We can start public campaigns. We need to reach out to the rest of the disability community, which is deeply, deeply divided. But I think we need some activism here to really get the message across to the public and the media about what's really going on. Anyway, other comments about either fixed route or fair?
Yeah. I've got a quick one.
Sure.
I would take a taxi cab, except there were two small taxi companies in my little town here, and rideshares put them out of business. And there's one in a neighboring town that won't come and pick me up. Mm-hmm. So rideshares now made the taxis go away, and that was their plan, and that's what they did. I think San Francisco still has taxis, probably yes. Not many, but not out here.
Earl, San Francisco has one of the best taxi programs in the country. They've always had it. They started their paratransit program before the ADA was ever passed in the late 80s. And so they have a very, very good taxi program. It's not perfect. Well, and there are problems because they have problems again with the rideshare companies, of course, but it's better than most.
I get it. Yeah. I mean, I was born and raised in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
That was back when it was a city.
Right.
Now it's an insane asylum. They need to build a razor wire fence around the city hall so the inmates don't get out.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you know, And I don't know if you know this, and this is totally off topic. I mean, my father was the executive director of the JCRC in San Francisco for 35 years.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I want to move on to other people. Does anybody else have any other comments regarding transportation? Because we want to hear from you and your concerns. Because the idea is to reform and overhaul. Gene has for years been the chair of the Committee on Access and Transportation. We need to get that moving again and really working on transportation issues. And we're going to submit a couple of paratransit-related resolutions. And we really want to move on track with regard to transportation, because so many people have issues. And we want to work out an advocacy plan. We want to work on advocacy training for people. We want to help people, guide them by providing talking points and possible letters so that people can go to their local and regional advisory committees and boards. It's especially important to meet your boards of directors and to really get to know them and to explain to them the problem. And it would be really wonderful as well if you could take them on tours and show them what it's like. You know, let them ride paratransit, let them ride a fixed route transit bus. I was talking to someone the other day. They were trying to get convince one of the directors of a particular transit district to ride in a wheelchair and wear a blindfold and navigate a Bay Area rapid transit station.
Yeah, bring that to a sighted person and they'll just be scared.
That's right. So... and they were so scared that they just don't want to do it. But this person I was talking with is not giving up. So I think this is another problem that a lot of these transit agencies have no idea what it's like for us. And this is not a pity party kind of a thing. It's just a fact. They don't know what it's like for us to have to cope with an inaccessible world. And they've never done it. And I'd like to see some of these people live their lives on paratransit for, well, I was thinking about a week, but even a day or two. Let them take ADA paratransit and go and do everything they need to do. And then let them, you know, go on a bus let's blindfold them. Let's have them, you know, use a wheelchair. Let's see how they can function. And I think if they understood that, maybe they would be more amenable to work with us and provide what we really deserve. Any other comments?
This is Christy.
Yeah. Christy.
So. The last time I was on paratransit, I was going to my son's house, taking the Riverside paratransit. And I asked the driver, now they have a better kind of a situation, because even though you're transferring zones, you're not transferring buses anymore, which you used to do. And it was so dangerous at the... at the Paris Transit Center that you had to stay on the bus until the next bus came. And so that was stupid because the drivers were waiting for each other, right? So I asked the driver, I said, how long will it be? And she said, well, you're supposed to get there at blah, blah time. I said, how many people will you be picking up and dropping off? Just, you know, so I can know. Oh, well, I'm getting you at this there at this time. Like, oh, okay, thank you. It's not okay for me to wonder where I am and to wonder who you're picking up, not who, I don't care who.
How many?
But wonder that you're how many people you're picking up or dropping off. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she refused to answer those questions. That's not
she
acceptable.
Refused to answer the question.
Mm-hmm. That's just not acceptable.
Oh, they've gotten terrible with Riverside.
Yeah,
but you see, that's the whole idea that it could take a day to plan your trip because you got to figure out where to go.
How to go. 3 days.
I think it was Chenier who mentioned that he recommends that if people want to go to a doctor's appointment, that they at least allot 2 hours, even if that's not necessary, because it's so hard to maintain schedules and whatnot. And you never know how many people are going to be on the vehicle with you. Mm-hmm. And also when they're going to pick you up, even if they have a window. Yeah.
And if you get picked up like I do early morning appointments at Kaiser, mm-hmm. and
They say, oh, I have an 8 o'clock appointment. Oh, we'll pick you up at 6:30. And it's like maybe a not even a 10-minute drive by car. And so I get a straight trip there and I get dropped off at, you know, 6:45 to 7 a.m. And the doors don't open until 7:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's unsafe and scary.
I have been told by transit, several transit districts, that with regard to paratransit, it doesn't matter about inclement weather and it doesn't matter about safety. Mm-hmm. That their business is to drop you off and that's it. Yeah. Any
you
other?
You have about
I know about
8 minutes left.
Eight more minutes, right? Yep.
Yes.
I've been looking. Thank you, Guillermo. A lot of the same people have been speaking. Is there anybody else who would like to make some comments? What kind of improvements would you like to see in transportation, be it paratransit or fixed route transit? Anybody have any comments about that? Or ideas about what CCB might do in order to bring those improvements to the attention of the public and the media, and also to make those improvements happen? Yeah, I think this is a very serious issue that people really need to think about. And I think it's a time that we really, really, worked with these transit districts, even reach out to state administrative departments like the Transportation Commission, Caltrans, and others. I think it's time that we let them know that we mean business. And I just think that, you know, people will say to me, well, at least what we have is better than nothing. And I absolutely vehemently disagree. We have rights, and those rights are being abused. And we should not allow these agencies to kind of trample all over our rights. And right,
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
We do have two hands.
All right. Let's see.
DJ Kessler and Nikki.
All right. Let's hear from DJ and then Nikki.
Hi. Yes.
Hey,
and hi to everybody that I know.
Hi.
And everybody I don't know. Sorry about that. that is rude. Yeah, because what I have seen happen, and I'm not sticking up for paratransit by any means, but I've now know of a case in the region in LA that I live that somebody ended up dying because of where or how they got dropped off. And this was a person, the end result, I think, is I noticed that as I'm not working these days and I'll go out in the middle of the day and that, and inevitably, you know, the 2 hours each way that it takes me, that can be, doesn't matter the distance, picking up people with other diagnosis other than blindness, that my region is hiring people with experience dealing with the work centers and such, and they have experience working with people with multi-diagnosis and that get scared of the dog. Inevitably, there is always somebody who's scared of the dog, and I do the best that I can in regards to it. Like, I'll turn my dog's head away from little things, just little things, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
You are but, 5 minutes.
Okay, yeah. So I just want to say that's you know what? There's so much more that we gotta do, that we don't have to take everything, or hopefully we don't have to end up doing that to get paratransit to say, no, you know what, people, our job is to drive you to and from, and we aren't responsible for anything else.
Gotcha,
and that's
Debbie.
Dangerous. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Nikki, quickly.
Well, number one, okay. I've known several people
excuse me, who have been dropped off blocks away from their homes and been run into very dangerous situations. Luckily, nobody was killed. But I think that if we could get spots on public service announcements and things like that, because we need to get the public involved. We need to let people know what the hell is going on. And we need to pack these meetings if we can, if we're in areas where people can go. And we need to be very loud about it. And just any way we can get the publicity out there, is because, well, it's a long story, but they tried to change 24th Street to Cesar Chavez. And I got involved because they only wanted to do it between Potrero and Guerrero, further fragmenting the Mission District from the rest of Noe Valley and all that. Well, anyway, they finally put it on the ballot because I wrote all these letters and everybody got involved and they all got pissed off. So finally, and I said, why not change the name of Army Street? Because it's a war term and Cesar Chavez is a peaceful man. And it was on the ballot and it is now Chavez, you know, Cesar Chavez. But, you know, one spark can start a prairie fire. And so I don't have all the solutions by any means, but I think we need to get the publicity out there. We need to let people know what's going on so that they in turn can get involved.
Thank you, Nikki. I think that we need to get together. We need to figure out what our expectations and demands are. And I think that we need to express them and we need to be very strong about it. We have been patient for nearly 34 years since the ADA was passed. It's enough already.
And David, yeah. Thank you for your article because The Blind Californian came out and your article's in it.
And it's very controversial and I don't care. I think it needed to be in there and I think we need to move and be very firm about our demands and work with people and help them along, help them advocate, work with the agencies. And I think we need to get what we deserve. And I want to thank everybody for participating today. I'm sorry many of you did not speak, but I hope that you learned something and that you are prepared to go out and advocate for what's right. Same day transportation for everyone, decent fares, and the right to get wherever you want, getting there, getting here from here to there and back again as easily, quickly, accessibly, and affordably and efficiently as possible. Thank you,
and
everybody.
And safely.
Yes. Thank you,
wonderful
everybody.
Program. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, David.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody.